Welcome to A Call to Lead at LifeScience.org, where we explore the leadership journeys facing life science entrepreneurs. I'm David Kirk, and in each episode, I sit down with a life science leader to uncover the moments that define their leadership. My guest this week.
Hello, I'm Alexandre Levin. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Osivax, which is a French and Belgian-based biotech company developing next-generation influenza vaccines.
We're grateful at LifeScience.org to have a community of over 400 life science CEOs, leaders driving change in biotech, medtech, tech bio, and healthcare. The conversations inside our community, stories of conviction, navigating challenges, and making bold decisions inspire us every week. Now we're sharing them with the world. Alexandre, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you, Dave, for having me today.
So you have a very STEM-heavy background. You studied maths, you studied engineering, and you studied cell biology. You worked as well with Bristol-Myers Squibb in kind of sales director, marketing management, that before moving into investment consulting and then CEO position with Imaxio, from which your current venture, Osivax, spun out from. I would love to know, where on that journey did you get bitten by the leadership bug? When did you decide to lead, and how did that come about?
Thanks for taking me back to my various positions and basically kind of beginning of a career. I think to answer your question, you know, when did I decide to lead? I think this decision comes, you know, quite naturally when we founded Osivax 7 years ago. But that, you know, it comes it was really built on decisions or orientations that I took really in the past. And really, I think it started by the decision that I wanted to work in biology. And I think that was really when I was 17 years old, where I really realized that biology was an extraordinary science in which I wanted to spend time on. But then at the time, I also realized that to make a difference, it was actually meaningful or relevant to not only focus on biology, but also focus on hard sciences such as math and IT. So that's why I decided also to, you know, not only do work on biology, but also work in math and physics. But that doesn't, you know, bring me to being a CEO, a leader of a biotech company. So what also was foundational for me were basically seeing people around me starting companies, having an impact, scaling, you know, their impact through companies. And that, you know, comes as early as when I was still a student in the US, where a few of my friends had launched companies, not in healthcare, but in the tech industry. So I think this all, you know, started to build back when I was 20 years old. And then I decided proactively that I wanted to be an entrepreneur in the biotech environment. And, you know, I proactively and systematically built some experience in academic in the US, in Europe, experience in big pharma, experience in market access, and then experience in management consulting, fundraising. And I think back in that was basically the story. And then at 30 years old, you know, what made me jump into the biotech is basically probably the third step of this story. It's hard to tell, but I think one triggering event was probably in 2009, the H1N1 pandemic, because at the time I was a recent father of my eldest daughter, and realizing how fragile our societies were. When, you know, I mean, it was clear that young infants were potentially at risk, and realizing that we didn't have any good countermeasures, that we weren't prepared, probably triggered some unconscious, you know, willingness to actually jump into the game. And so actually a couple of years down the road, I met with Dr. Praterwal, who was the owner of Imaxio, you referred to it, and realized that this company had an amazing technology platform, that there was an opportunity to join this adventure. in a very entrepreneurial manner, even though it was within a family office, so within a financially, you know, solid environment. And I think that really was what made me jump into IMAXIO. And then, you know, naturally we developed what became Ozivax within IMAXIO, I mean, an R&D portfolio, which was then spun off into Ozivax. So I don't think it's one decision, even though the decision we made to found Ozivax was made in 2017, but it really came naturally after you know, a set of decisions, a set of events that took me not only towards entrepreneurship, leadership in biotech, but also more specifically in immunology and influenza vaccines.
Yeah, a series of fortunate events by the sounds of it.
A series of fortunate events, yeah.
Tell me, when you were seeing your peers like starting their own companies in different sectors, what was that feeling like? Or was there a particular one that stood out that the excitement really got to you?
Yeah, the feeling was like, you can actually make a difference. And you can, I mean, and well, actually anyone can make a difference. And realizing that you don't make a difference on day one, you actually make a difference after building this difference. And you don't have to have the full solution defined on day one. You actually start, you know, I mean, you basically learn to walk as you walk, or you learn to swim as you, you know, you're in the swimming pool. So it's always great to have someone to help, but anyone can do it. It was kind of my discovery at the time. My epiphany, and that's what I wanted to find. Yeah, my epiphany was, you know, anyone can do it. It does take a bit of time, but it's you can't wait until, you know, you've sorted it out to launch it, because it's never going to be fully sorted out.
Very true. And you said that you were kind of making this journey and gaining experience in all of these different areas in terms of leadership and market access and management. And were there any personal obstacles or challenges that you faced that you had to overcome on your leadership journey?
I think, I mean, the leadership journey was a series, as you said, of fortunate events that I proactively, you know, looked for. And I think each of them were natural, at least, or naturally presented by leaders who I encountered and, you know, who trusted me to give me some experience. Now, when it comes to grabbing, you know, the opportunity and moving forward with this opportunity, I think the obstacles that I saw were related to, you know, the discovery that I just referred to. I think, you know, you may think it's too early. You know, it's always actually too early, or it's never too early. But the question about, you know, do I have the right experience to be the right leader was clearly something originally. I mean, I remember when I became the CEO of IMAXIO, which, you know, we had a shareholder. So it was not my venture. You know, I mean, I was really the CEO with one shareholder who was funding the company, but realizing simply that, yes, I mean, being a CEO includes ensuring that you can pay the salaries at the end of the month, which was something that was so natural for me for 15 years. I mean, it was just normal process, but actually there is some burden, you know, that you have to look for. So I didn't have the experience for that, for example. I didn't have the legal experience that, you know, realizing after a couple of weeks that you have to review all these, you know, contracts and everything is defined by legal agreements. Of course, you have lawyers to help you, but if you ask your lawyers for everything, you'll get bankrupt rapidly. So learning all these new skill sets was something that didn't really come as an obstacle. But if I'd known, maybe I would have, you know, thought it was too early. I think the second element was related to, I mean, yes, the burden that you face as a leader and the stress that you have around the financial balance of your operations. once again, you know, when you're in a big, in a larger company, and even in academics, I mean, you have budgets that you need to comply to, but these budgets are kind of theoretical somehow. It becomes very real when you have to pay salaries, when you have to pay your contractors. And that's not something that, you know, I had really anticipated. I guess the last thing, very important, as we grow, we need people. And I think building the trust around our project, building the trust around our capacity to be successful, was also an obstacle that I had not really anticipated. That, you know, I'm so proud about the team that we have, that, you know, I think we were pretty successful, at least so far, on that. But that is really a very, I mean, a key success factor in the start, I mean, the journey so far. So I would really, you know, point to these three things. One is the personal challenge is, you know, if I'd known, I would have felt, you know, it was way too early. I didn't have the right experience. But at the end of the day, you learn as you walk. The second really burden was the financial burden and stress that you have, which really becomes real. It's not theoretical anymore. And building the trust around the team is really, I mean, it's your job as a leader. So fortunately, that comes as an obstacle, but a very, very exciting obstacle to overcome.
That last point, especially, I think, is one that other leaders share quite heavily mm-hmm. today. And looking at your peers, other life science leaders, not just in Life Science Org, but across Europe generally, what do you think are the other main challenges that you share with them?
I mean, I think in the healthcare industry, one of the big challenges we have is related to the time frame of what we develop, at least in biotech. I mean, I can see my peers in, you know, the tech industry, consumer good industries. The cycles of product development are, you know, you count in months, several months, sometimes years. I mean, for us, it's years, sometimes even, you know, decade. So I think that's one of the burden we have, you know, choosing, I mean, feeling that, you know, we're going in a direction, we can change things, but I mean, the science is either there or not. So there's all this uncertainty. I guess I guess everyone will talk about the fundraising environment. And I think that's also related to the cycles. You know, long-term cycles mean that you need to anticipate, you need to project yourself in years with your investors. And it creates obstacles or challenges that, you know, you wouldn't have in a fast-paced, you know, fast-moving industry. And yeah, but I mean, there are so many opportunities and amazing, you know, reasons to work in this health tech ecosystem environment. I mean, you know, thinking that we can change the lives of people, you know, patients who are sick and saving them, not us, but our projects, working with amazing scientists whose values are really similar to ours, you know, looking to make a difference positively in the lives of people, I think really overcome all the challenges that we have to address every day.
Yeah, and I think you've mentioned that you looked to other people on your leadership journey in academia and in mm-hmm. kind of industry for advice and help over your leadership journey. I'd love to know what lesson, maybe a great big nugget of wisdom that you might have to share that you learned from somebody that you couldn't possibly have learned in formal education.
Everything. Yeah, I would say, yeah. I mean, you know, I think I'm trying to think back about, you know, what have I really appreciated in the leaders I've worked with, my managers, my leaders. And I think it's this mix of respect and trust and push towards, you know, respectfully push towards learning. And I think, I mean, I've seen where I really was, I mean, had so much fun and I think was good is when I had, you know, people trusting me, pushing me, of course, but also trusting me. So that's kind of a, you know, obvious thing to say, but I guess it's really this managerial leadership examples that I could not have learned, I think, in any academic environment that these people taught me. But I think, I mean, beyond that, I think I talked about, you know, previously in this discussion about all the things that I didn't know when I started. And I think academic is, I mean, it's great to learn all these theoretical ideas, all these theoretical and academic concepts. When you get into a company, when you get even, I mean, similarly in a lab, I mean, you just got to get things done. And so I really feel that I'm learning every day and that everything that I've learned, which really is relevant. I mean, most of it I learned in my professional career, not really at school. I've learned at school how to think, how to work. I've learned at school how to look into publications. But when it comes to the solutions that we're finding every day, this is really, I mean, with the experience that I feel I can address these.
Was there a particular leader that you worked with who led by example that stands out in your mind?
I don't like to give names, but yes, there is. And actually, there are several of them. You know, an example of a great manager in a big company, an example of, you know, driven scientists, either in, you know, more recently or in academic, I mean, a few years, examples of entrepreneurs who take risks, who go beyond their comfort zones. You know, I have the idea of, I mean, the example of an entrepreneur who really worked all his career very successfully in a specific geography, actually France. And together, I mean, we went to invest and innovate in the US, in the UK, really going beyond both geographies and work. So feeling, understanding that these people can take risk, and, you know, that gives me ideas and examples of, you know, how to have an exciting professional life as well.
Yeah. And you've mentioned early on in your leadership journey how the birth of your daughter around the time of that H1N1 scare influenced your journey we've talked before through Life Science Org. You know, we've had a few conversations, and I know you being a father has influenced your journey as well. How has it impacted your, I guess, learning and adaptability for your journey?
Well, first, I think it tells you, you know, gives a balance, I guess, because that's, to me, really, I mean, I feel that my professional, you know, life is important, of course, but I feel every day that my life as a father is way more important. I mean, yeah, I mean, concretely speaking, is really what's most important, because my children are still young, and so they depend on us. And also, I think, I mean, becoming, I think we said that, we discussed that, and that's true, that becoming a father, I mean, was such, but such life-changing, you know, everything-changing experience. Like, everything changed on that specific day about my everyday life. And it really taught me how, you know, you can just change everything towards a priority. And I think in Europe, we don't have that. We kind of always want to balance, you know, many priorities, and we are, I believe, a bit less focused than our folks in the US. Well, I realized that, you know, having a daughter, everything became second, everything. And so, but also, everything was new. I didn't, you know, you asked me about, you know, what did I learn in my education that could have taught, you know. Well, we once again, you know, I'm talking about how we learn, how we test things and how we move forward by testing and by learning as we walk. I think, I mean, becoming a father was like the most absolute example of such an experience. I mean, nothing could have taught me what happened, both emotionally, both in terms of what needs to be done. So there's, I mean, there's no course that can teach you how to change a diaper. I mean, maybe there are actually, but that's not what I got through. But then, uni, you just work as a team with whoever, you know, can help you. My wife in this case, and you make it happen, and everything becomes, you know, secondary. And then after a few weeks, you kind of, you know, get through that, and you know, life goes back with the balances. So yeah, I think that was somehow that taught me, you know, if you can do that, strangely enough, I mean, every parent's been through that. So every kid, we've been through having parents. I mean, someone has, and we learn as we walk. So there is a real parallel, I think, between this and, you know, starting a company. I mean, you know when it starts, you don't know when it ends, you don't know how it ends, you don't know how it's going to be, but every day has to be, and is actually full of, you know, new exciting surprises. The path is just very intense, but always new, and you feel you know, excited, and I feel, and I'm surprised positively by things that I, you know, wouldn't have anticipated. So it's really, there's a real parallel, I think, between being a father and an entrepreneur. So this is how, why I'm saying, you know, I mean, anyone can do it. That's really my honest thinking. Anyone who wants to do it can do it, because, I mean, you learn as you walk.
And you've touched a little bit on Europe, and it's very easy, I think, to especially in your case, you've been to America, you've worked in America, you've seen what it's like there. So before we talk about AussieVax in a lot of detail, tell me, what do you find particularly exciting or inspiring about European life science today?
I mean, yeah, as you said, we are a European company. We were founded on, you know, based on science that was developed in Europe with a bit of American money, but developed in Europe, in, you know, with British science, I mean, English, British scientists, Belgium, German, you know, German and French. And so I think really what we have in Europe is this scientific foundation, which it really comes as being state of the art. You know, is it based on the history, or, I mean, and it's, yeah, it is based on history, but it's really continuing. And I think we have some of the most amazing science and scientists and institutions in Europe. We also have, and that's really, I mean, that's the, yeah, that's the basis for our ventures. We also have many different cultures, and that's exciting for the everyday life, to be honest, to be clear. I mean, you know, I always talk about Germany, French, Flemish. I mean, we just in our team, I mean, we have, we're, you know, we're a Francophone team because we're based in Belgium and France, but we have German, Italian, people really in the team. One of our co-founders is an Irish professor, educated in Oxford. And how can that be more exciting? I mean, you know, that really creates so much dynamic, but also, I think, so much different points of views that enrich, I think, the project. We are also, if you think about it, and I'm looking about our example compared to, you know, US-based competitors, we're very effective in spending money. We do quite a lot of things based on how much we have. That's probably related to any proximity, the top tier scientific foundation, you know, which create really this ecosystem of people in institutions. But at the end of the day, I think we're very effective in spending the money we have. I also believe, and you know, you always look at, you know, what's going on outside of Europe, but looking at you know, we have a lot of public support, and I think the public support in Europe is quite stable over time, probably because of our, you know, complexity of our institutions, but it's quite stable over time. And we are seeing this as, I think, a strength. I think Europe is also very attractive to Asian partners. I mean, is it more attractive than the US? It has different perspectives. Mm-hmm. And I think especially today with the geopolitics becoming, you know, being a global powerhouse, but, you know, with less geopolitical leadership in the world is probably a strength when you start building collaborations. But of course, you know, and of course, it needs to be filtered out with what the US have and what we have. So it's always, as you said, you know, it's a balance of what are our strengths, where can we be better, because there's no frontier in the science that we develop. I mean, the science that we develop will be used in the US as well as in France and in Asia if and when it's successful. So the point is to find and to leverage on strengths that we can get in Europe, but also as we grow, that we can get in the US and in Asia.
So given everything that we've discussed up until now, Alexandre, tell me about AussieVax. What is the great unmet need that you are tackling, and why is now the time to tackle it?
Well, the unmet need we're addressing is today the fact that influenza viruses cause tens of thousands of deaths in the US and in Europe, millions of severe cases with hospitalization that create a very significant burden on our societies and that go really beyond influenza. I mean, over the winter, you see these hospitals which are just not able to function properly. And so this is really the unmet need we're addressing, because today we have some vaccines, but they're not properly effective. So we are addressing the lack of effectiveness of the current flu vaccines, and thus, if and when we're successful, this dire and very expensive impact of influenza every winter. We think that now is the right time, because we are clearly seeing an acceleration in innovation. That's likely related to the surge of investment in infectious disease and vaccines after COVID-19 crisis. And we clearly think we have the best, you know, value proposition, and we are therefore accelerating as much as we can today.
And imagining that everything goes to plan, and I'm talking very positively here, mm-hmm. like the results are fantastic. You get all the funding you need to execute your strategy. What is the impact you hope to create when you're successful? How are you looking back on the world, and what has changed?
Well, what has changed is we are free from influenza, both seasonal influenza and pandemic influenza, which means that not only do we avoid, you know, I was talking about tens of thousands of deaths every year in modern societies because of this disease, but we also are free from, we are freeing hospitals from this burden in, you know, January, February, March in the Northern Hemisphere, and, you know, I mean, June, July in the Southern Hemisphere, which has a profound effect also in, you know, I mean, cancer patients, you know, surgeries, which are not, you do not need to be postponed, etc. So really, that's every year the objectives. And I think this would have a profound also impact in our life expectancies, because influenza is one of the main killers of elderly patient, you know, people. So that's really, you know, the first point. The second point is, you know, we haven't heard about a pandemic influenza for a while, but we would also be free from potential influenza pandemics, which could kill hundreds of millions of people. I mean, in the worst case. So that's also a pretty big prize to me.
Certainly. I know the NHS here every winter is exactly the same. You know, you're waiting to hear that announcement of don't go to the hospital unless you really, really, really need to. And it would be wonderful, I think, to free up that for, as you say, so many other patients who need care.
Mm-hmm.
Alexandre, thank you so much for your time on the podcast. I have one more question. Tell me, what have we not discussed that you would like to take the last few minutes of your podcast to talk about?
What have we not discussed? We've discussed about a lot. I think what we've not discussed is maybe what I haven't been strong enough is, you know, how exciting this journey of being an entrepreneur in the biotech industry is. How difficult it is, obviously, but excitement and you know, and proudness comes with challenges that you can overcome. So I think I would, you know, like to underline how much fun there can be, how exciting it is to work with people in the team here, you know, at Ozivax, or with some of our partners who are all willing to do the same thing, which is to really free the world from a very nasty disease that's been so nasty that, oh, now we're used to it every winter and it feels like it's, you know, normal. But no, it is not normal today not to have a proper, you know, well-functioning vaccines against influenza. So having, you know, the excitement of working hand in hand with researchers, with physicians, with, you know, people here, project managers and scientists here, is so exciting and such a rewarding journey that, you know, I'd like to emphasize this at the end. It's a difficult path, but it's a very rewarding journey.
I think that's a great note to end on. Thank you so much, Alexandre, for your time.
Thank you, David.
Everybody knows that Europe is a global leader in generating translational science. We also have world-class leadership talent. To hear the stories, lessons, and experiences of our science leaders, listen to A Call to Lead at LifeScience.org, available on all good podcasting platforms.